You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we, of course, talk about the Indiana Pacers, as always. My name's Tony East. I cover the team for Forbes and the Westside Community News, and today, this Pacers podcast will go a sixth day talking about not the Pacers as draft coverage rolls on here on Locked On Pacers. We'll continue to look at some prospects in this draft as the Pacers have their highest pick in the first round since 1988. And today, looking at a guy they could think about at six, a guy they talked to on lottery night, Ben Matherin from Arizona joining me to do that from our Locked On NBA Big Board podcast, Leaf Thulin. Leaf, I just butchered your name, but how's it going, man?
I'm doing well. Ben Matherin's one of the guys that I had in the first round last year, remains high on my board, and I got to see him in person this year at March Madness, and he certainly had a stellar performance against TCU in one of the best games in the tournament, so that left me with a good impression for him.
I also liked him last year, and I continued to watch his tape during the year this year. The only game I caught live was against Utah, and he had the funniest shot I've ever seen from a prospect where he skated between two defenders and threw up a mid-ranger, and then it rolled all the way on the rim, popped out, and then wedgied. I've never seen a wedgie like that in an actual game. It totally unrelated to his skills. But what I like about Ben Matherin is something I said in our YouTube intro that if you're listening on audio, you didn't get to hear, and that is that he is, to me, the slitheriest prospect of the kind of top guy. Maybe not the slitheriest, but one of the slitheriest guys of the top prospects in this class. And as a wing-sized guy who can kind of, you know, get around dudes with it off the dribble, and he's really good off the ball, like getting free all around screens. That's where he really shines to me, as a guy who's able to get his own shot or get open by just weaving his way around and being kind of hard to contain as he runs around the floor.
Yeah, for sure. And I think everyone's pigeonholing him into being a 3-and-D, and he's got the frame to be that. He's about 6'6", 6'7", I think he weighed 204 pounds at the combine, which is really ideal for the modern game. But I think he's got more than that in his game. He doesn't have to just be 3-and-D. He can play with the ball a little bit. Some of his best games are in the biggest games. Against Tennessee, a game they lost, he had 29 points. He led Arizona to a very tough win against TCU that I referenced just a minute ago. And he shot... He shot 70% of all of his attempts in the half quarter jumpers, and he shot a very good field goal percentage, and that's important. And he shot 42% from three as a freshman, 45.1% on catch and shoots over his career. And on unguarded catch and shoots, he's 46.2%. So there's the shooting. And you talked about the slitheriness. I think that he's got more off the bounce game than he's displayed, because Arizona was such an egalitarian approach. They had three all first team Pac-12 players. And they also had a guy in Dalen Terry, who I'm really, really high on, who's approaching first round talk, and that wasn't all first team player. So he didn't have to do as much as some players like Keegan Murray had to do for Iowa. And I think that's being used against a knock for him rather than a strength, is knowing his role, playing an egalitarian approach, yet being the man. He was the player of the year in the Pac-12 conference, and deservingly so.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to contextualize that stuff a lot with the really good college teams, right? How will they look when they either have the ball more and in a system more catered to their skills? Because his playmaking, you know, we would talk about this later, but like, he wasn't really asked to do it. It still got better from year one to two at Arizona, which I think is important when projecting his growth. But like, they weren't ever like, oh, Ben Matherin, go make a play. You know, when he would go around a screen, he actually had some interesting, and I put this in my notes as kind of a strength for him. He had some nice, like, over his head passes to roll men on the wing when he would do like side PNR, but you know, I wouldn't call him like an awesome passer, but he was pretty good at it. He just never really was asked to do it. Most of the time when he would go around a screen, he was looking to score, and he was pretty good at it. You know, he could get – when he – this isn't necessarily a strength or weakness, but he's very much Daryl Morey in his shot strengths. Like, if he comes around a screen and he gets all the way to the rim, really good finisher. His three ball, like you mentioned, is pretty dang good, and he's able to get himself open either off the ball. And by the way, I love Arizona for this. There are a lot of NBA stuff. Right, a lot of floppy, a lot of just general NBA stuff. That will translate pretty well. But because he's able to get so open, he's a good three and finisher at the rim. I think that will be a good projection for him in the NBA. But there's just so much about his offensive game that, like you mentioned, because of how Arizona plays, makes it hard to see what his playmaking level is, even though he was pretty good as a scorer when he was asked to have the ball.
Yeah, and I think when they needed buckets, they said, okay, it's Ben Matherin's time. And I think that's really important. And that not may not necessarily be the thing for the Pacers or any NBA team that drafts him, but it shows that he's got this ability to step up when it matters. And I think in terms of, we talked about the offense and the 3-and-D and how he's got more potential to be more than just a 3-and-D. He could be drafted in a similar sense. I'm not comparing him to Paul George, but Paul George, and you can correct me as a Pacers guy, when he was drafted, people said 3-and-D with potential to handle the ball a little bit. I think Mathurin can dribble the ball and be elusive, create space for himself, and do more than he did and more than just three-point shooting. For the defense, I think he's a solid, solid athlete that I think is being undersold in comparison to a lot of his peers in this draft class. And he displays that a lot in his like vertical pop. He dunks the ball a lot, and he gets a lot of rebounds. He's a really, really good rebounder. He's got long arms. And I think defensively, Arizona was really sound, and they had an anchor in Christian Coloco. But I think he can fit most NBA schemes because, like you said, Arizona plays an NBA style. He wasn't the best team defender. That was Dalen Terry. But he was not far behind, and I think he can translate as a plus NBA defender pretty early on in his career.
We'll definitely talk about the defense later for several reasons. I think the athleticism part that's good to me, part of what makes it good to me is I'm stealing this term from a bunch of other people who talk about the draft. I very rarely use it, but it's functional athleticism, right? He inserts it into his game in ways that allow him to have a positive impact in that way, whether that's dunking instead of making a tough layup or being right up in it. Like, he's really good at using his athleticism to stay in front of who he's guarding on defense, or he's really good at using his athleticism to bend his body. Like, he snakes pick and rolls a lot. Like, that's kind of rare at the college level, like get a guy on your hip, you know, and finish in that way, right? He uses his athleticism in those ways a lot. And I think that is what makes it so useful and impressive to me, is it's not just like, wow, look how fast this guy is and how high he can jump. Like, okay, can he do anything with that? Like, is it giving his team an advantage? And in his case, yes, especially on the defensive end. That's where I thought his defense was the best, especially when he was engaged, is when he was like, okay, I can stay in front of anybody if I'm really dialed in, shuffling my feet and showing off that athleticism. And that's why I really, really like Ben Mathurin, is like, it's rare, maybe not rare, but it's not that common for, you know, a really functional athlete to also be a good three-point shooter and a good off-ball mover. And that kind of combination of skills is really appealing to me.
Yeah, and I think Arizona's system is going to be highlighting players for time to come under Tommy Lloyd. I think that's what made it appealing for a lot of Gonzaga players in years past. Obviously, that was Mark Few, but similar system, off-ball movement, player movement, NBA sets, knowing how to share the ball. And I think Ben Mathurin might have been the most outstanding NBA fit of any of these players that have come through the system, because he comes off floppy action, shoots threes off pin downs. He has side pick and rolls. He runs the floor, and he really flies up and down the floor. If the Pacers chose to play fast, like Tyrese Halliburton, Isaiah Jackson, they'll be playing fast. And him and Chris Duarte running off pin downs, I think that would be a very good fit. We'll get into that later, but that's just something. He's very adept at fitting into most NBA systems I can think of because of the versatility and the way that Arizona employed him.
I think the most underrated Mathurin skill, as I've kind of, you know, read about him and watched other people's videos about what they view his skills as, is his catch and shoot ability. Some of it is just that he's good at it, like he makes the shot. But something he does really well that is taught a lot in the NBA is the hop on the catch, right? You kind of bend your knees and hop into the catch, so you're already bent it down, and then you go up right away. And he's really smooth with that. And I think that's going to be really big for him, especially as an athletic guy who can get a shot up over even taller defenders who are kind of right on him. Because he's got a quick release with that hop, I'm really high on his catch and shoot ability. And I think that will make him really threatening, because if he doesn't have – so I am a little worried about his mid-range, and we'll talk about that in a second. So he might not have the perfect counters to get if he gets run off the line. But I think that will make it, as an athletic guy who can handle the ball, kind of hard to figure out exactly how to defend him when he's at his best. It's like, okay, do I really get up on him when he can make this catch and shoot three, or do I need to sag off so he doesn't drive right past me? So because his technique's already really good on a very important shot, especially since he's not going to be a primary creator in the NBA, he'll be off ball more. Because he's so good at that catch and shoot three, I think that makes me think, okay, all this functional athleticism and ability to move off the ball is going to really help him at the pro level.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I mentioned that he shot 46% over his career as a catch and shoot. He shot 44% on closeouts, on ones where they were guarded, but not like terribly guarded. Then you mentioned the one weakness, a knock that you've got is the mid-range. And I think that is something that we'll address. One more strength that I think we could go over is that his efficiency on jump shots. Like, he shoots a lot of difficult ones. He shot 70% of his half-court shots were jump shots. But he was ridiculously efficient at scoring, and his efficiency would look like an NBA efficiency chart. Like you talked about Daryl Morey's dream, even though he struggled in mid ranges and he shot a fair amount of them, his efficiency was 91st percentile in jump shot efficiency. So yes, he could get to the rim a little bit more and improve his overall efficiency, but that's not something I think that's a strength that he was that efficient in shooting more difficult shots than and it's easier to improve shot selection than it is shooting ability.
Yeah, a lot of tough shots, yet still just on the most basic level, 57.6% true shooting, right? So that is certainly a good projection for him and could in fact be a strength at the pro level, that he's got the difficult shot counter ready to go. Hey guys, let's take one short little break here so we can talk about Sakara, because feeling your best starts with what you eat, and Sakara helps you live a healthy, balanced lifestyle and truly enjoy it with delicious, plant-rich, transformational nutrition that builds a foundation for living in your best body. Now is the time to seek wellness, joy, and abundance in all areas of your life. Starting with what you eat, and with Sakara, you get nutrient-dense meals, snacks, and supplements that nourish your body without ever sacrificing taste or quality. Sakara is a wellness company anchored in food as a medicine on a mission to nourish your body through the power of plants. Their nutritionally designed, chef-crafted breakfast, lunches, and dinners are made with powerful plant-rich ingredients, helping you boost your energy, support your digestion, curb your sugar cravings, and get your skin glowing. Plus, it's all delivered right to your door, ready to eat. And right now, Sakara is offering our listeners 20% off their first order when they go to sakara.com/locked20 or enter the code LOCKEDON20 at checkout. That's Sakara, SAKARA.com/LOCKEDON20 to get 20% off your first order. Sakara.com/LOCKEDON20. Let's do the weaknesses part. Never as fun, but there are some for him, and some of them kind of blend into stuff we already talked about. In the mid-range part, I do want to talk about as one of them. Not necessarily that, you know, he makes enough that they're not like a bad thing necessarily, but something about Ben Mathurin, it's really easy to bait him in to taking them. Like if a defender takes two steps back after he takes his first dribble, Ben Mathurin will take the mid-ranger. He will take a between-the-legs dribble and fire up a 20-footer. And he has this bad habit to me where he likes to push shoot. Like, and the push shot's fine if you can hit it or like it's a strength of yours, but he does it from really far from the basket, like somewhere where it's like, that is not where you should be doing a push shot from. So I think it's kind of easy to bait him into a shot like that in a way that it's not necessarily true for other prospects.
Yeah, I think he's got pretty good touch on floaters, but I think he does settle and kind of go with an in-between jump shot and floater. And he goes off 2 feet, which is interesting to me as someone who thinks that most of the floaters are off 1 foot. You get your foot into the paint under the nail and you shoot the floater. He jump stops and shoots a push shot, like you said. I think the weakness with his mid-range game is that I feel like it's an area of Arizona is pretty analytically run, and he shoots a lot of mid-range jump shots, and it looks like indecision because I buy his jump shot. He settles for a lot of jump shots, and then I think part of the reason he only gets to the 18 feet is he attacks east and west rather than north south, and so he takes one dribble outward rather than a dribble forward, and I think that is something that's pretty correctable. So I find his weaknesses, or at least these ones that we're referencing, pretty correctable and something that I wouldn't be too scared of if I'm a team picking in the top 10.
Yeah, his first dribble, or his like burst dribble, isn't forwards very much, you know, it's like to his side and then between the legs, and that's fine if you're setting up something to get past a guy, which he does sometimes. But I think that if he worked more on pushing towards the basket on that first dribble, that would be a big thing for him. Because that's to me his biggest offensive weakness, is kind of the settling nature if he gets baited into those shots. But that, you know, he made them enough, like you said, 91st percentile on jump shots, that it's not a bad thing necessarily. It's just if it's that easy to bait you into shots that the defense wants you to take in the NBA level, you know, especially when your teammates are going to be a lot better than your college teammates, like you've got to know either not to shoot that or to give it up a little bit more. The defensive side is strange because, you know, the athleticism, the ability to be up in a man's face, he's pretty good at that stuff. I liked his defense in that regard, but he is a textbook ball watcher. Like, he is not great off the ball, and he, you know, if his man moves two steps away from him, he has no idea a lot of the time, right? Like, that is the biggest hole in his game to me on both ends, is his off-ball defense needs a lot of work. He can recover enough that it's not terrible. Like, he's a decent steals guy, but because he is so ball watchy and kind of floats when he's not involved in the action, that's where he really gets killed and really hurt Arizona at times this year.
Yeah, I think in games that I've watched, especially in person against TCU doesn't have a great shooting team, and they were still able to capitalize using off-ball movement with Ben Matherin's guy, because he's a kind of a big-time, like, big playmaker. He makes a lot of big steals when he's locked in, but there are times where he watches the ball and they back cut or they run an action and he gets stuck on screens. I don't worry about that as much as I do the on ball for him, because that's usually what he'll play. And I think you can learn to be more attentive, you can be taught to be a better off ball defender, and on ball defense is so much of traits. And I think he's got those traits, but like you said, that's a weakness that you have to address. You have to say, hey, why were you beaten on the back cut a couple times in one game? And something he can work on. And I also think getting around screens, he's slithery on offense coming around screens. Defensively, I think he gets held up on screens a little bit and tries to shoulder the big. And maybe he just wants to show off some of that physicality, because he's certainly a plus athlete in college. And he's kind of got broad shoulders. I think he needs to work on getting narrow around those screens and getting around, especially if he wants to be an on-ball defender of the ilk of like Reggie Bullock, for instance, who's been guarding guards all postseason, and they've got a similar frame. And I'm not saying they're a one-to-one comparison. I just think defensively he could have a similar potential there.
It's funny that he is like that with screens, because, you know, I kind of noted that, especially when his man was finishing, this is a weird thing to kind of pin like one skill on, because he's not a contact-averse player. But when his man is finishing, he is very contact-averse. It's kind of weird. Like, he doesn't foul that much, which is fine. You know, it's not a weakness necessarily. But it's almost like, just bump the dude. Like, just hit your defender. Like, make it harder for him. That was something that I thought was really interesting. Even though he's like with his man, his speed and athleticism, he's right there with him. And then he would just kind of, you know, duck out of the way or not do enough to contest the shot, because he is a little contact-averse on defense outside of screens. And he got screened kind of a lot at Arizona. So his defense is really interesting to me, because I think it's going to be really important that off-ball defense gets a little better, because in the NBA, you got to be paying attention all the time. Like, offenses get more and more complicated, except for at the very end of games, I suppose. So you got to be really on it, and these elite creators at the pro level can throw anybody open at any time. Like, if you're asleep for even a second, your team will get killed, and the Pacers were terrible at a lot of that stuff this season. So if he can't really address that skill or get better at some of that stuff on that end of the floor, I think he'll be a better defender in the pros than he was in college. But if he can't address that stuff, then it's going to be kind of harder for him to be that 3-and-D, even if I don't put him in that box, but that 3-and-D projected guy that some have pegged him as.
Yeah, I think his defense has more to improve immediately in the NBA than his offense. I think his offense, at least immediately, is just going to be 3-and-D. And I think in the long term, he will become more than a 3-and-D. And that's why I remain pretty high on him, have him in my top 10. And I think 3-and-Ds are so coveted that people forget about the other skills that those players come in with. And yes, there are some. I mentioned Reggie Bullock. He is a 3-and-D to a T. He just shoots threes, plays defense. But I think he has this ability to be offensively more aggressive. And we talked about his weaknesses of settling. But I think in the NBA, that doesn't hurt him as a settler. I think defensively, that's the biggest weakness is ball watching and getting around screens. And if those are your two biggest weaknesses, I think that's a solid chance. And whether your Pacers want him or not, I think that would be a pretty good fit with the roster construction there is in place, I should say.
He needs to watch film of Johnny Davis. Ironically, Johnny Davis is very good at slithering around those screens on the defensive end of the floor. Leaf, what do you make of his playmaking? Because we talked about it. It did get better. He does have some nice reads in pick and roll, especially from the wings more so than the top of the key. But I wouldn't say his passing is a weakness necessarily. I'm curious where you fall on this, because he wasn't really throwing guys open necessarily, but he was still good at getting guys the ball when they were open or in open space. So where would you put his playmaking on kind of the scale of strength to weakness?
I'm pretty neutral there. I think he's a ball mover rather than a facilitator or a playmaker. I think he moves the ball adequately. He doesn't hold it up too often. He goes into isolation occasionally, but Arizona was one of the best teams in the country in terms of assists to turnover and just assists in general. I wish I had the stats with me there, but Arizona, I think, was top five in the entire country in assists. And Ben Mathurin was a contributor in that, but often he was a recipient. I think his pick and roll reads were pretty good, but he also had the benefit of two of the best four bigs in the conference that he played in the Pac-12, in Christian Coloco and Azulis Tubelis. And I think a lot of his reads with the ball are kind of ingrained and taught. I don't see this creativity with him necessarily, but he makes solid decisions that are taught rather than forcing the ball and being careless with it. So I think I would say like maybe 50. If it's a 0 to 100, I'd give him a 55. So he's slightly positive in passing.
Yeah, he's got like I. The number I would give him is I'd say he could read two guys. Like a lot of the elite playmakers can read like four or five or like all the steps ahead of the play, right? Like if he gets screened and he takes one dribble and he sees that he's got two guys on him, like he can read both of them, right? Or he can read the guy under the basket and his man. Like he can do that. And that makes him a better passer than some of these other guys around his range to me. Like I think he's a much better passer than Keegan Murray, for example. But I wouldn't give his playmaking like an overwhelming positive, but I agree with you that I would not put it in the negative category as well. Anything else you feel like we missed in the weaknesses department for Ben Mather?
I think we mostly covered it. I think one thing I would say is he can be passive in games, and he wasn't in some of their big games. Like I referenced the TCU one a couple times. He had 30 points in a one-and-done setting. I will say in a couple games, they were not often tested, but when they were, he occasionally had games where he would sit and hold the ball and be passive and hope for the other players on his team. But I think that has a lot to do with the egalitarian approach that Arizona employed. And I think in the NBA, that won't be a negative, but I thought I'd mention it as a potential something he could improve.
Yeah, the tournament, he was mostly dialed in, I thought. But when he gets dialed in, he gets to that two-pointer, that mid-ranger that he loves to kind of force up. And so his three was good, his rim was good, but a lot of the clunky ones that I would love for him to cut out two or three of every single game. One more break here, guys, to talk about our partners at BetOnline.net, who continue to be the number one source for all of your betting needs and sports info. You can find all the latest odds, news, and sports developments, including this year's basketball playoffs, Major League Baseball scores, fights, and even next season NFL futures right on BetOnline.net. They've got NBA lines up for all the games. Mavs favored by 3 in a game that starts in an hour. Celtics favored by 6.5 in game 4 against the Heat. That series has been so weird. And all those lines and more are all over at BetOnline.net, your continued source for all your sports wagering information from live betting to playoffs, esports, and more. Head over to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends in the action over at BetOnline.net. BetOnline is where the game starts. Let's talk about NBA fit here, because that's kind of a key part of these projections. You're not projecting what these skills will be at the pro level. It's can they grow into the pro game? There is a distinct difference there. And a lot of times that is the high level of that to me is, you know, if there is more space, how will these skills hurt or help that guy in the pro level? And there's more to it than that, especially as we talk about the Pacers specifically, who now that they have Tyrese Halliburton are going to be speed, you know, quick playmaking. Can you read what's happening right away? Because Tyrese is, you got to be ready for the ball. So he's got to be quicker with reads and he's got to be able to play in space at the pro level. And on offense, I think his translation to the NBA in general, not to the Pacers necessarily specifically, is going to be pretty good. Like more space will allow him to get around his guys, set up his athleticism, and because he can move so well off the ball already in an NBA offense, I think he's going to translate I think his offense will translate not like year one, no one's really does, but pretty quickly, especially compared to some of these other guys at the top.
Yeah, I actually think his shooting will translate pretty much immediately. And I think a lot of these teams drafting 6 through 10 can use a shooter that can play, I'll say, adequate NBA defense. I won't say he's going to be a plus or a minus immediately. And he may even be a slight negative as a rookie, but that's just kind of the nature of how the NBA works. You look at the teams picking there. I did a podcast with Rafael Barlow on Locked On NBA Big Board doing my top 14 mock. I had him 9 to the Spurs. And I honestly thought that was the worst fit of 6 through 10. But that's just how the draft fell. And the Spurs still need shooting to complement DeJounte Murray, Keldon Johnson, Jakob Poeltl, some of those guys. The Pacers, obviously, you're very familiar with their roster. If they're going to play quickly and they're going to run pick and roll with Tyrese Halliburton, Isaiah Jackson, and they are going to run floppy sets with Chris Duarte and potentially Ben Mathurin, I think that's a beautiful fit. The Blazers, I have them taking AJ Griffin, who's a similar player to Ben Mathurin, but younger. And potentially more explosive if he's healthy, but that's a great fit. He just has to shoot and maybe play like the similar role to what Gary Trent played a couple years ago in the bubble for Dame Lillard. He's still got to shoot and play defense. That's a good one. Eighth pick, the Pelicans have made a name for this. Trey Murphy's kind of in his role, and I don't know if he's going to go there because of that, but he shot 46% from three as a rookie and plays good defense. And then who's got 10? I'm blanking. Oh, the Wizards. That's not a perfect fit, but anyone can have a three-point shooter and play defense. But I really do like his 6 through 10 range is where I've got him in my big board. I've got him number 8 on my big board, number 9 in my mock. And I think he could really translate as a plus shooter pretty much instantaneously in the NBA.
I agree with that. And I think it's interesting. Like, I don't know if he'll be asked to do pick and rolls that much, but he was good at those, you know, especially scoring for himself. Like, that will eventually translate. That's going to be very important in the NBA. Like, the NBA teams run pick and rolls almost every possession. At some point in the possession, there is a screen for the guy holding the ball. If you can navigate that and get your defender on your hip, great. You're going to be at least adding some value and making the defense panic to some degree. So I like his offensive fit, especially as the catch and shoot stuff, but also because he can do a little bit more and he's got that athleticism in space. On defense, his big weakness being that off-ball stuff, when it's more spaced out, it's just more amplified. Like, I think, it'll get better. His on-ball defense is fine. Like, he'll be good enough at that. But when the game is more spaced out, you've got to be more dialed in. There's a lot more area for your team to get beat. So I think his defense will take a little while to fully translate. And Chris Duarte had this problem too. Like, Chris Duarte was a good rookie defender. They were like, hey, it's your sixth game, go guard Kevin Durant and James Harden. That he had an impressive rookie year in that way, but you know, his off ball D and his team defense definitely needed some work as well. As you kind of go through way more advanced reads, especially off the ball, it takes time for those guys to learn the timing, to learn the sets, to learn the speed, and I think that will take Mathurin as much, if not more, time than a lot of these younger guys.
Yeah, I think he'll learn defense. I think that's going to be a 20 game adjustment period, and I think he's going to be picked on in those first 20 games regardless of where he goes. I think once he learns the system, I think he can blend himself in, be a little bit of a chameleon, and find his way to being a adequate NBA defender. And I think his high end projection, because we're not talking about the rookie, when you draft a guy at number 6 overall for the Pacers or 6 through 10 where he's kind of projected, you're talking about what you want that from their career. I think for the first year or two, he's going to be low end to adequate, and then by the end of his career, I think his high end projection is he can be a you know, like, if we're talking percentiles, I think he can be a 75th 80th percentile defender. And I think shooting wise, he athletic traits, at least. I'm not saying that, like, with what he's coming in right here, but I think he's got the athletic traits to improve, and he's got a good work ethic. He's got the prototypical body, gets around screens well offensively. I think he can do it defensively, and he can test really well. That's something I should have mentioned on earlier. But offensively, I think he's going to shoot nearly 40% right away. I really buy his jump shot. It's beautiful. And I think he can score up to 18, 19 points a game at some point in his career. So I think he's got a higher ceiling than a lot of other people prognosticate.
Dang, I don't know if I would get him to that level of defense at his peak. It's definitely possible. It's definitely possible, but that's a tough projection to make. Although he did play again in a lot of NBA settings at Arizona, to the extent you can, against Pac-12 opponents. But yeah, I think his game will mostly translate pretty well to the NBA level, and to the Pacers specifically. Athleticism and speed blend well with what they want to do. And, you know, we didn't really touch on his transition game, but, you know, Arizona did encourage, like, if you grab the board, you're allowed to push, and he's a decent rebounder. So he handled it coming up the floor a lot, but the Pacers are going to just say, give it to Tyrese and run as fast as you can. Like, that'll fit pretty well, I think, with the Pacers specifically, a team that needs, you know, I don't know if you call him a guard or a wing, it doesn't really matter, but a team that needs kind of wing guys who can be that off-ball guy and provide some value at that position. I think he fits well with Haliburton, especially offensively, and doesn't necessarily fill a hole on the defensive end with what their roster is right now, but projects pretty well with the roster Rick Carlisle and Kevin Pritchard have in place.
Yeah, and I'm curious to hear what you think about if there's a draft pick that you think would elevate them and be the franchise-altering player. I don't think anyone you can get at 6 is, and I think you kind of fell in draft purgatory, unfortunately, but I think Ben Mathurin's is about as close. Him and Keegan Murray have about as high of a ceiling in terms of scoring 16, 17 points in a few years and playing above average defense. And so I'd be curious to hear those thoughts. But I think Mathurin is a solid pick at 6. I would have no complaints based off the system that I see built from afar.
My answer would have been Banchero, but obviously at 6, that is not a possible thing for them. Like a lot of the top 3 or 4, really. Ivy's a little different because him and Haliburton are both guards, but more dynamic play is what that team needed a lot last year. So yeah, I think the thing about 6 to 8, like between Griffin, Mathurin, and Murray, it's like they're all kind of good fits because they provide that shooting and floor spacing that the team needed last year. Griffin's probably the worst defender of the bunch. I think you agree with that. I don't know, but so maybe that makes him the worst fit of that trio. But they'd all provide something the Pacers needed last year on their team, especially on the wing. So I think that they might just opt for, you know, maybe who they view as the best defender or who they view as the best fit of that trio, because it seems like Duarte and Haliburton could be around for a long time.
Yeah, and I think you have the good franchise stepping stones. You just don't have the franchise guy. So right. I don't know if you're going to get him in Ben Mathurin, but Ben Mathurin certainly can elevate a franchise and make them better and maybe contend. Rick Carlisle likes to contend. He likes to have experienced players, and I think Arizona's system has been good to Carlisle before, and like Jason Terry, and I think if he gets some shooting similar to the Jet off the bench this time in a starter, I don't think he'll be too displeased.
Yeah, unfortunately, Josh Green was also a Rick Carlisle pick 2 years ago, so we have to assume that it'll be more Jason Terry than Josh Green with a top six pick instead of it. I think that was 21 for Josh Green. I can't remember exactly where that was.
18, I think.
18, okay. Right outside the lottery. So that is an interesting projection. We'll have to see about that. Leaf, thank you very much for the time on this wonderful, nice Saturday in Indiana. I have no idea how the weather is where you are. Where can people follow you and all your stuff on the Locked On NBA Big Board podcast?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me. Happy to talk some lottery all day. My Twitter is exactly my name, LeifThulin. And then I'll be on NBA Locked On Big Board, and I have a podcast called The College Sports Hive where I talk about a lot of these players in college. So I've been following them for a long time, and any listens or follows are appreciated, and thank you for having me on.
Thank you very much for the time, everybody. The show is at Locked On Pacers on Twitter as we continue to dive into a lot of these top prospects. I am at T East NBA. Tomorrow we'll finally retreat a little bit from draft talk and go back to recapping a little bit of last season with a player season review, but we'll do Chris Duarte's season because he was the rookie from last year to kind of continue on the theme of the draft. So thank you all a ton for listening. Hope you had a great weekend, and we will see you tomorrow.